You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with Josh Newman, my co-host. We are here on a Thursday afternoon getting ready for the Utah-USC game that will take place Saturday at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. So we're going to talk about USC, obviously, but we wanted to bring on a special guest with us today, and that guest is Luca Evans. He's the USC beat writer for the Orange County Register. Luca, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks, guys, for having me. Appreciate it. Excited to be on.
Yeah, it's good to be here. We like to be able to talk with different beat writers and kind of get your take. Obviously, the beat writers have a better understanding of what's going on with the teams, and so we wanted to get you. Obviously, USC is a team that Utah is very familiar. Too many U's here in this situation. So
agreed.
These two teams are obviously very familiar with each other. They play each other every year back when they were South Division rivals. Now, you know, there's obviously a lot at stake with these games generally each year. So I guess just starting from the very beginning, from your perspective and based on, you know, the players and the coaching that you've talked to this week, what do you think this game means to USC right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's at a really kind of critical inflection point in the season. You had this the 6-0 start that after a couple of pretty convincing wins over, you know, generally kind of inferior opponents. You know, you're looking at Arizona State, looking at Colorado, you're looking at that Arizona game, and you're seeing so many kind of flaws all pile up, you know, issues with the offensive line, issues with the secondary, you know, consistency of the linebackers, all kind of having this thin sheen, you know, of a mask over it by Caleb Williams' brilliance. And then we saw in that Notre Dame loss, just the line collapsed. You know, Caleb Williams played the worst game, at least the worst half of his college career. Receivers couldn't consistently, although Lincoln Riley disagreed with this, seemed like they couldn't really consistently separate against Notre Dame. It just set Caleb Williams up, and it really just kind of exposed a lot of these issues that we've seen prevalent with USC through seven games. So not undefeated anymore. Their hopes for doing anything in the Pac-12, this is a really key game for them. And especially Lincoln Riley over the past few games has kind of consistently made the point that, you know, they feel like they're, you know, they're very close in a lot of different areas. They feel like they're right there. They feel like, you know, the general sentiment of kind of getting over the hump soon. And if things don't kind of start turning around, you know, especially this Utah game is kind of key, you know, there comes a point in where Riley's kind of backed himself in a corner against a wall a little bit, just with a lot of the public comments that he's made. So I think that's a really interesting thing moving forward. I think this team, you know, is going to be plenty motivated against Utah. I think Caleb Williams in particular is going to be plenty motivated. Had a lot of interesting things to say yesterday. So really big game for USC.
Luca, can you kind of expound on, you know, the Caleb Williams situation here? You know, if you think back to Pac-12 Media Day back in July, he seemed to indicate that, you know, he essentially had this Utah game circled. And why wouldn't he, right? You know, USC lost to Utah twice, including the Pac-12 championship game. In that Pac-12 championship game, Utah beat up Caleb Williams pretty good. Yet, you know, just expound on maybe some of the things that he said specifically pertaining to Utah this week.
Yeah, and so he didn't say too much particularly pertaining to Utah. You know, mentioned again, you know, this is a familiar defense, bringing back, you know, same coordinator, a lot of the same scheme that he saw last year, but nothing too specific in terms of that. I think the focus more this week, you know, and you factor again certainly Utah into this, but the focus more this week being his attitude coming off, again, you know, maybe the worst that we've seen him play in college, and especially, you know, had a couple of really interesting comments about a Notre Dame fan that, you know, rushed the field the last week when I asked him about that. I mean, just talking about, you know, a lion doesn't concern himself with the opinion of sheep, and talking about, you know, kind of giving this you know, putting himself. I'll stop that train of thought for a second and go back to the Utah game last year. We saw, you know, that first loss, incredibly emotional, you know, for him in that game. And again, a little bit tampered down, but the same sort of emotion we saw in the Notre Dame loss, you know, afterwards. You know, he was standing up there at the postgame podium and he was taking it, but a lot of, you know, you could kind of see he was seemed to be holding back tears a little bit, just clearly that emotion there. And his stance yesterday, completely different air, was carrying himself, you know, just with a lot of, you know, confidence. And again, that, you know, lion and sheep comment. I think it'll be really interesting to kind of see and, you know, not only going into a game that already carried so much or was carrying over a lot of emotion, as you said, Josh, for him the previous year, but just purely coming off, you know, a loss in South Bend that we've really never kind of seen him that vulnerable from a physical standpoint of playing football. So that's been an interesting sort of attitude this week, I would say.
This USC team, obviously, they're loaded. I mean, they're loaded every year. They get a lot of skills players, and they do that especially on the offensive side of the ball. But it feels like at least this year, it is, if Caleb Williams is doing well and he's able to kind of manufacture stuff, especially in those late game situations, whether it be through Colorado or Arizona or whatever this may be, if he can do it, USC is going to be fine. Is that the general sense that you get as the beat writer, or is there something different that maybe is behind the scenes that we're not seeing?
Yeah, I think the sense, especially after that Notre Dame game, it's like if he's even a tick off, and we saw this against Arizona, where, you know, the thing that people in context of the Notre Dame game, the thing that people maybe don't realize is that he was off for a majority of the first half against Arizona too, before he kind of, you know, figured out Arizona was loading up, you know, the secondary, and he started, you know, was dropping the lineman back into coverage, and he started really using his legs. With him, it's like, I do think the general sense is like if he's a little bit off, you know, this defense was better against Notre Dame, but I think the biggest kind of area of weakness right now is the line. It made it really hard for the running game to get anything going. You know, Marshawn Lloyd has been really solid for the most part this year, but he's kind of slowed down in recent weeks, and that's coincided with a lot more issues popping up on the offensive line. And there's just the wide receiver room, there's a ton of talent. There's a lot of guys that Lincoln Riley can throw in the flat and kind of, you know, get going there. But besides Brendan Rice, from time to time, there's not really been a consistent kind of deep threat on this roster. There's not really been a guy who can, you know, you can point to in a one-on-one situation. You know, again, Rice has had his moments, but hasn't really been that guy that you can point to and, you know, say, you know, he can go get a ball from Caleb at any time. So I think a myriad of issues or concerning things kind of starting to sprout up. And yeah, I mean, Caleb can make, you know, magic from nothing, but that only really can go so far against a really strong defense. And we saw that against Notre Dame, considering the inconsistency of the line.
Utah's defense has been excellent for the majority of the season, right? Championship level type of defense. But conversely, the offense has kind of been bogged down in mud, and you've got this QB carousel and Rising is out, but they scored 34 points last week and they ran for 317 yards and they did some things. What does USC have to be most concerned with from Utah as Utah comes in there?
Yeah, I think firstly, USC secondary has been both inconsistent and a little bit banged up. It looks unlikely to me that Max Williams is going to play on Saturday. We don't know if Bryson Shaw We don't know what his availability has looked like. They were both banged up against Notre Dame. Christian Roland Wallace has been great, you know, transfer from Arizona at cornerback, but, you know, Damani Jackson's been hit or miss. Jacoby Covington as well was out last Saturday. So they've been kind of missing a lot of key, you know, pieces of depth or guys available, not available for the past couple of weeks. I think it's been hard to kind of build that consistency there. And yeah, if Cam Rising's out, you know, maybe that doesn't matter as much, but, still, they've been prone to, you know, giving up big days, and especially to kind of more mobile quarterbacks. I think, too, the ground game, USC's defensive line had a really strong start, kind of leveled out a little bit, but the linebackers really kind of stepped up against Notre Dame. I think, you know, Tackett Curtis, freshman, he's kind of, he had a few games there where you wondered if, you know, coaches didn't look to put in a couple more returners or start them over him, but he really kind of paid off their trust against Notre Dame. He's going to need to have a big game. Mason Cobb, kind of from that inside linebacker spot to slow the run a little bit, which you mentioned, you know, really solid week for Utah last week in the ground game.
Lincoln Riley's teams have, you know, they've always been great offensively, and they can do a lot with their quarterbacks and the skills players that they have. But for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to recruit a defense that is on par with what that is, or even to a level that that will help his offense. What do you kind of get the sense from Lincoln and kind of what this defense is, what maybe his mindset is? Is this a problem for USC? Do you feel like it's just kind of a current iteration and he's still growing into that? Or what's kind of been the issue with USC's defense right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, the feeling after last year that, again, you know, I wasn't on the beat for, but reading back and what have you, the feeling was like, and I think Lincoln Riley expressed this, like, we need more size up front. We need our guys to look like, you know, Georgia and Alabama and that sort of thing. Like, our guys don't look like that. And so he went out, you know, obviously USC went out in the transfer portal and got Bear Alexander and, you know, Jameel Muhammad and a lot of these guys who are making a difference now. But I do think it, you know, and in looking back just at, you know, especially some local recruiting in recent years, like USC has missed out on, you know, a lot of defensive line prospects coming out of this area. A lot of, you know, especially in the past few years as kind of Oregon's, you know, started to really like make a foothold in the Southern California region. You know, like I look at a guy like Mateo Ugalele out of, you know, St. John Bosco last year. That was a guy that, you know, USC recruited pretty heavily, and he's now at Oregon. And I do think, you know, I'm sure the move to the Big Ten in part is, you know, certainly going to be a little bit more attractive in helping to kind of grow, you know, attract linemen from the Midwest, you know, make things, their program a little bit more visible that way. But I do think it is, you know, both on the offensive and defensive lines, because USC hasn't really recruited in the past. I actually just looked back at this, but in the past four recruiting classes, they've only recruited 2 4-star better offensive linemen in general, which is significantly less than, you know, programs like Oregon or Washington. So I do think at some point, you know, if those continue to be areas of inconsistency this year, you got to look at, you know, what's the program's approach to building through recruiting in the trenches as opposed to through the transfer portal, as things have been so far. So yeah, that was a long and winding answer, but yeah.
Under the current 4-team college playoff football system, a 2-loss team is just not going to get there. It's just not constructed that way. USC obviously has 1 loss. You still have to play Utah and Oregon and Washington. Is there at all a sense of urgency now to not incur a second loss? Cause a second loss is going to essentially eliminate your primary goal. Is there at all, you know, like a sense of urgency in that case?
I mean, we've gotten a little bit of sense of that. Certainly over the past couple of weeks, it seems like Lincoln Riley's been a little bit more just demonstrative, I would say, with his responses, with talking about certain things. But for the most part, you know, at least what we've seen in media availability and this and that, you know, I think players have kind of taken the mindset that, you know, just bouncing back from a loss. You know, we haven't heard a lot about the goal of a, you know, college football playoff or this and that for, you know, a little while, since the start of the season, really. So I do think I do think certainly there is that sense of urgency there. I think another thing that is interesting too is that Lincoln Riley has kind of continued to expressively use language that's like kind of a little bit of a inside versus outside mentality, with a lot of kind of the noise that's going on about USC's defense and this and that, you know, talked about guys in the locker room and a little bit of this like us versus them kind of mentality. And, you know, I think that's kind of the most obvious thing in terms of that sense of urgency right now, or that sort of general sense of where they're at. But yeah, not too much talk about, you know, the CFP or what have you in recent weeks, I would say.
Look, we understand your time is valuable, so we'll kind of get you out on this last two-part question.
Sure.
Is Notre Dame the blueprint to beat USC? And as that is there, how does USC lose this game on Saturday?
So I think and this was interesting because I think after the Arizona game, you got a sense of like, okay, this is from a defensive perspective, like this is potentially how you can slow USC's offense. Like you play some dollar packages, you throw a lot of, you know, defensive backs in the secondary, you mix in blitzes and, you know, you slow the passing game kind of that way. You know, make Caleb a little bit uncomfortable, but then you have to account for his, you know, his legs. But Notre Dame's front, I mean, to me, it didn't look like they were doing anything really special in terms of blitzing or what have you. Like, USC's offensive line just really couldn't handle, for the most part, or had a bad game against that front. I do think, if you're talking about a blueprint, I do think that the game more to kind of pinpoint is that Arizona game. Because not every team has the personnel that Notre Dame does on defense, particularly their cornerbacks did a tremendous job. But yeah, for Utah, for teams moving forward, certainly, I am curious to see how USC and how Caleb Williams kind of attack, you know, a lot of formations that are loading up in the secondary and this and that. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting week and interesting rest of the season for sure.
Well, awesome, Luca. We appreciate your time. Let people know where they can find your work and kind of where they can interact with you, whether it be like Twitter or whatever it may be.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm at by Luca Evans on Twitter. So can follow me there, or just read my work in the Orange County Register or LA Daily News or any of the Southern California News Group papers that you consume if you're in the Southern California area. So, yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to meeting you on Saturday and kind of seeing how this game plays out.
Thanks, Luca.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. It was great to be on.
That was Luca Evans from the Orange County Register. Had a lot of good things to say about this USC team. I think there's, you know, this is obviously going to be an interesting matchup to see how this pans out and what takes place. You know, this isn't a perfect matchup for either team. I think there's flaws from both programs, and you're going to see teams that are both kind of trying to win for different reasons. I know, you know, each team's obviously trying to win each week, but I think you have both teams that are trying to prove something to each other, prove something to themselves, and It'll be interesting to see how this goes. He paints a picture that it almost feels like USC is a wounded bird, right? That it's just kind of like he made it seem like really down the way that USC is. And maybe that's just not a fair representation of what is really going on there. But it just feels like a program that is kind of stuck trying to figure out who it is while still having college football aspirations, college football playoff aspirations. They're all college football aspirations. But I have
college football aspirations. Okay.
Look, don't we all, right? But I think this is a team that is just, you know, they're trying hard to be able to live up to the expectations that Lincoln Riley himself has put on this program. So it's an interesting situation. You know, I don't know what this game is going to look like. Obviously the Coliseum is a crazy place, but it'll be interesting. I don't know. What were kind of your impressions based on that interview?
Yeah, let me first apologize if you could hear beeping in the background. I am in the common room of my building in Sugar House on the ground floor, and one of the alarm keypads is going off in the distance in the lobby. I apologize.
We need to make a joke out of this as being some sort of a doomsday scenario for this game or something.
You know? This is why I go to the Sugar House branch library around the corner where it's quiet. Anyway, I digress. I thought the most interesting thing that Lucas said was that this game for USC sort of feels like an inflection point, right? You know, you've beaten up on team, not well, you beat up on some teams early and you caught some luck against other teams, specifically Arizona. That's a game that you should have lost. And then you stepped up in weight class and you got beat up by Notre Dame. And Caleb Williams was bad in the first half. And sure, the defense played better than it has. That much maligned Alex Grinch led defense that Lincoln Riley continues to defend. So you are at a bit of a crossroads. And it's something similar to, look, before Utah played Cal, after the Oregon State loss, I contended that that game for Utah was a referendum on the rest of Utah's season. Like, you know, in spite of all the injuries, in spite of what's going wrong, that Cal game was going to at least help decide what you want to be for the rest of the season. And if you would come out and laid an egg against Cal, it would have started to look one way, but you showed up and you played pretty well against Cal. And from a USC perspective, that's what this feels like. This is a bit of a referendum on this USC team, what it is, what it can still be, what its toughness is, how much they still think about those two Utah losses, how much that matters to Caleb Williams and the rest of that group who was there, how much that matters to Lincoln Riley. So this is, yeah, it's an inflection point. I thought that was well said by Lucas. So this is not the massive, gigantic type of Pac-12 championship game hype that we saw last year, but this is a huge game for USC. If you think you're still a Pac-12 championship contender, which, look, you are, right? You're undefeated in the Pac-12, but you know that you still have Oregon and Washington to go. If you think you're a Pac-12 championship contender and you think you should still be in that college football playoff mix, you show up Saturday at home and you beat Utah. It's really that simple. You know, you're hearing a lot of things this week, you know, not really so much from the local media, but more in a national media perspective. I listen to, as I'm sure you do, I listen to a number of podcasts and I try to read a lot of things. I think there is a growing sentiment that this USC program is a little soft and that Lincoln Riley doesn't have the horses to like get his guys over the proverbial hump, right? They lost in the Pac-12 championship game last year to Utah. And then, you know, you beat up some teams, you got lucky against some teams, and you haven't really beaten anybody of real consequence, right? Look, you're 6-1 and you're undefeated in the Pac-12, but you got smashed by a Notre Dame team that was not flailing, but like fighting to save its season. So again, just to kind of wrap up my point here, yeah, it's an inflection point for USC. And I absolutely think that, yes, it's a referendum on at least your season. And, you know, depending on who you ask, maybe it's a referendum on what Lincoln Riley's program is right now.
Well, and I think that's what makes this game so interesting. Like you said, there's not really the same attitude going into this game from both programs that, okay, this is the showdown. This is going to determine the Pac-12. I think we're to a point now where Oregon and Washington have stolen the spotlight for good reason. And so USC, you know, they're kind of a little frustrated that they're not in that spotlight, but that's kind of to their own doing. But I, you know, as I look more at this game, it feels like there's a tremendous amount of pressure on this USC program, probably not seen since, you know, early days of Clay Helton, where he was trying to stave off, you know, frustrations. And it's a completely different situation. Lincoln Riley's in no fear of being fired. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I think in terms of trying to establish USC as that blue blood program that is going to exist beyond just the Pac-12 as they move to the Big Ten, there's a lot of pressure here. First, you know, you're on a 3-game losing streak to Utah. You are at home where there's a lot of pressure there. You're coming off a terrible loss that, you know, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner had probably his worst game in probably his career. Probably
that's as bad as he's looked in his college career by far. Yeah.
And so, like, I just think there can be so much emotion going into this game where they don't want Utah to get the upper hand, especially if it's the last game these two teams will play in who knows how long. This becomes a very difficult game. And so you have to wonder, like, look, if Utah can come in there and smash them in the mouth just even a little bit, how much does this just spiral, right? Like, and look, I'm not predicting Utah going in there and coming away with a blowout win. If they do, wow, we've got something to talk about.
I'd be a little surprised, but I digress. We can talk about that later.
But I think those types of environments can happen, right? This is a situation where they can have that, where, you know, you get smacked in the mouth and all that internal pressure and the external pressure and everything starts to build and you have guys that are just frustrated and they can't do everything and Caleb can't do it all himself. You know, he's dealing with an issue with his finger, apparently, I heard today. And, you know, maybe that's him giving himself ready for it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to play into that fan speculation. let's just lean into it. Caleb is sandbagging himself to, no, I'm just kidding. But this is a situation where I think Utah really has nothing to lose. Like, if Utah loses this game, this isn't one of those where it's like, oh, wow, Utah lost. This is a referendum on the program where, you know, where are they going? They're spiraling down. This is a program that is injured. They're hurt. They, you know, they shouldn't by all means win this game in a hostile environment. And so I think that's where that pressure comes against USC to overperform and feel like they have to do whatever they need to. And so for a game that has traditionally been very emotional and has had, you know, rivalry type feels, this can be a very dangerous game for both teams, right? There's very few games in this series where it's been a blowout, you know, and it's always been relatively competitive throughout most of the games. And so it's just going to be an interesting feel to see how this is. Does one team try to overcorrect too much? Does one team try to do too much in a way that they kind of lose themselves in this? And then it kind of is, like you mentioned, an inflection point on the season. So that's kind of what I'm looking at here. I think this becomes a difficult game for USC just from that standpoint, but they still have the upper hand in my eyes.
Just to further your point about, you know, big picture, you want to be included like in that blue blood conversation and you want to be like contending for national championships every year. It's pretty important that USC does something this season on a large scale because things are not going to get any easier as you go into the Big Ten. It's going to get hard. Look, it's a 12 team playoff. I understand that, but it's going to be very hard to like not go 9-3 and not go 8-4 playing a Big Ten schedule. As you were talking, I just, you know, I called up USC's 2024 schedule. Just listen to the schedule for USC. You are playing LSU in Vegas to open, Notre Dame, you're at Michigan, and you are playing Penn State, Wisconsin, and Washington.
That's crazy.
That's your 2024 schedule. You know, of course the non-conference stuff is, you know, is agreed to like years in advance. You know, the LSU game, I think the LSU game came before the Big Ten stuff happened, but like that's a monster schedule. So if you want to be, you know, thought upon as a playoff contender and a blue blood and you're contending for national championships every year, it would be really helpful if you can kind of like build some momentum this year because it's not going to get any easier as you kind of wade into the Big Ten waters starting next year.
Well, and as much as we want to joke about Texas being back and, you know, having fun with that kind of stuff, USC is in very much so the same situation. They've been more relevant than Texas in terms of being in the rankings and being at the top of the rankings. But they're in the same situation. It's not like they got into the college football playoffs. It's not like they've really even sniffed it outside of last year. And so it's a difficult situation for them where they feel like they have to get back into that. Lincoln Riley was brought on to be the guy to bring USC back to its dynasty, you know, and get them into a program that was going to contend for national championships. Even going into the season, they were picked the number one team, with everybody knowing that Washington was probably going to be there and Oregon was going to be there. And if Cam Rising was available, Utah was going to be there. Yet USC was still there. Everybody wanted USC to succeed, and they're just not quite there yet. Now it's funny we're saying that. This is kind of a similar situation with Utah, where, you know, there's a lot of pessimism around Utah, and for a lot of reasons, they're 5-1. Yet USC, they've only lost one game and it's out of conference. That you can lose to Notre Dame and still make it to the college football playoffs, but you have to be perfect for the rest of the time. I just think there's been a lot of smoke around this program that has made it feel like they aren't in that situation where they can contend, and that's what's difficult for this program. So you have to wonder, is this game where they put kind of all their eggs in their basket? I mean, they can do that again when they play Washington and Oregon and all that, but I feel like this game, more than anything, if you can beat Utah, that is a huge sign of respect and sign of turning the tide for this program that is really spiraling in a lot of ways. In not in a real true traditional spiral, but I think in a way of where their expectations are and what they expect. They have to get over this hump of Utah, or else it's all over from there.
Yeah, no, you know, Utah and Kyle Whittingham, Utah is one of those teams that gets a lot of respect. And I think there's a pretty wide belief that if you beat Utah, you stepped toe-to-toe with them physically, and you met that physicality, and you were able to do some things. And if you beat Kyle Whittingham, that's another sign that you are doing something right. If you beat Utah, I don't care what the injury situation is, you know, the quarterback situation, generally speaking, broadly, Utah is absolutely a team that if you can get a win off them, you have done something right. I thought that Oregon State outplayed Utah badly. I thought that Jonathan Smith coached a terrific game and pushed all the right buttons, and he beat Kyle Whittingham. And when say it again.
He out-Utahed Utah.
That's well done. He essentially out-Utahed Utah. So point being, if you're USC, no matter what's going on, no matter what's wrong, no matter what the defense looks like, Caleb Williams, the finger, he played poorly against Notre Dame. That's in the past. If you can get a win off Utah, that's a big accomplishment, and maybe that is the start of this, of the snowball that gets rolling downhill. And look, of course, you still have to play Oregon and Washington. There's plenty of potholes still to go, but you can't get to the Oregon game, you can't get to the Washington game as a contender unless you get this one now. If you lose to Utah, your season starts to take on a different type of look. If you beat Utah, your season still takes on a different type of look, but in a positive sense. And again, that goes back to, this is a bit of an inflection point and a fork in the road, so to speak. You know, this is where USC is. And so, you know, it's kind of the same thing for Utah. Utah has one loss. They are not out of the mix for the Pac-12 championship game, but this game for Utah, again, is going to determine a lot of things. If they win this game, you're still in the mix for the Pac-12 championship game. If you lose this game, you're on life support. If you lose this game, we've talked before about, if you have two losses, the season starts taking on a certain tone. Maybe you never see Cam Rising and or Brand Keithy, even if they're ready at some point, if you have two losses. So, there are not stakes at the level of a Pac-12 championship game or New Year's Six, but there's something on the line here. Again, not a referendum like the Cal game was, but there's something on the line here. Your season will take on a certain tone no matter what happens here. It's just a matter of, it's going to take on one tone if they win. It's going to take on another tone if they lose. That is what's at stake here. Your season, let me back up. I don't know that your season is on the line, but what your season can be, what your season will be determined based on the outcome of this game.
And that's what makes this so disappointing, in the fact that this game will no longer exist. Is this, from the very beginning, USC and Utah was the absolute first Pac-12 game ever played in history. They had a commemorative ball. It came down to a field goal could have changed the tide for Utah. And, you know, Utah was always looking up to quote-unquote Big Brother and trying to fight USC and try to prove that they existed in the same realm. And this game has meant something for the entirety of this Pac-12 tenure. You know, it got to the point where Utah kind of overtook USC, and they became on par with USC, and it wasn't, you know, we're going up against this quote unquote giant. You know, we're now equal, if not better in a lot of respects. Utah has the 3-game win series, right? They now have a 6-4 record over the last 10 games against USC, where they have the upper hand. This isn't a game where, you know, Utah takes lightly. Cam Rising has performed his best in the USC games. This is a game that Utah has always played up for. And say what you will about the warts that Utah has in every single season. You can look at last year in both of those games where they had warts. This is a game where they play up to, even though that they have been more competitive than USC over the last little bit. This is still the game that they use as the benchmark, as the token game to where they can say, look, we are a contender in college football. We're not just this lowly Mountain West team that we were more than a decade ago. We are now among some of these, you know, they're not the traditional blue blood, but they are contending with the blue. There's too many words here. Too many blue bloods where they feel like they can be in that realm. And that's what changes this. And it's unfortunate. So like, I know a lot of people don't necessarily consider this a rivalry. And I think everybody considers USC a rivalry just because of where they've been in college football stature. But in large part, this has been the closest thing that Utah's had to a rivalry in the past decade plus in the Pac-12 outside of that BYU game. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And I've felt for at least my time here in Salt Lake City covering Utah, which hasn't been that long. You know, it's only been about 4 years, but like this game matters. And it always seems like there's something at stake, whether it be, again, you know, the South Division lead when the conference still had divisions, or, you know, staying on track to get to the Pac-12 championship game. In the case of the second meeting between Utah and USC, the Pac-12 championship was at stake. It just feels, you know, look, there's coach speak, right? You know, one game at a time and every game matters, but like that's what the coaches say. Then the media feels a different way. The Utah-USC matchup doesn't feel like just a regular game. And again, that's because there's something at stake. And Utah had kind of grown into this. Look, you know, they're not a lowly Mountain West team, and they kind of methodically, you know, became like this preeminent Pac-12 power. And a lot of that is like come at the expense of USC. You know, you think back to the 2021 game at the Coliseum after Aaron Lowe's death. You know, Utah had beaten Washington State a couple weeks prior, and they had, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty there, right? Like, you know, Charlie Brewer had left the program, and Rising Starter versus Washington State. Then you were dealing with a player death, and then you walked into the Coliseum. Like, I remember walking into the Coliseum that night, like not really knowing what to expect. And by the end of that game, like Rising had thrown for 310 yards and they completely blasted a USC team that was dealing with an interim head coach. And that felt like the start of something in hindsight, right? Hindsight's always 20/20. I mean, I walked out of the Coliseum that night thinking like they played over their heads and they like rode the emotion, but like hindsight's always 20/20. It's like, that was sort of like Rising's arrival. And that was the beginning of something significant, right? And obviously, you know, there was a hiccup at Oregon State, but like that night at the Coliseum, that was sort of the beginning of something big. And, you know, Utah won the Pac-12 that year. And then, you know, they rolled through most of 22. And we all remember the first Utah-USC game last year where Rising went for, you know, 475 yards and 5 touchdowns. And he was the MVP of the Pac-12 championship game in the second meeting. So Utah-USC means something. And there's something at stake, and there's just something a little bigger. And maybe it's not quantifiable, but it's just a bit of a feeling, maybe. Like, this game feels bigger than your average mid-October regular season game.
Yeah, and this is what, you know, Caleb Williams was essentially, he wouldn't go out fully and say that Utah was the game that he was circling, but it was obvious. Anybody that talked to him recognized that this game meant something to him. It, you know, Notre Dame means something to USC, but this Utah game meant something to USC because it was just a game that they felt like they had. You know, as well as he was last year and he got up to his Heisman Trophy and all that other stuff, he was still bugged that Utah got them when they could have been in the college football playoff. And so, you know, it's an interesting situation, and it's fun to be able to look at. I don't want to spend too much time on this, obviously. You know, we've got other things to talk about, and so we can move on. So Either way, it's a fun rivalry game. Whether it is a rivalry or not, it's still considered that way. So let's consider it that way as long as it lasts for one more year. So transitioning now to the actual game on Saturday, Cole Bishop, he will be out for the first half of this game. He got targeting in the second half against Cal. You can say what you want, whether you agree with the targeting call or not. I feel like that can be any targeting call you can, outside of a few. It's a difficult situation, but Utah was denied their appeal, and so he will have to sit out. That leaves Nate Ritchie to be able to be the guy to fill in for him. From your perspective, at least from what you've seen, Cole Bishop has been one of the best players on this Utah defense, which is crazy to say because you got Jonah Ellis, Lander Barton, you've got a lot of guys there that have been great, but Cole has been an integral part of this. Where do you feel like the impact will be felt most? Do you feel like Utah will miss him in that first half, or is Nate Ritchie the guy that can kind of Can Nate Ritchie be the guy that can kind of give Utah what it needs to in that first half?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. I mean, look, Cole Bishop has been essentially the quarterback of the defense, right? You know, calling in the plays, just getting everybody lined up and getting everybody in order. He's among the leaders of that defense. And then individually, he's a monster. He, you know, downhill bruising will, you know, lay you out type of, you know, old school defensive back. He is a terrific, terrific football player. And you just, you know, you don't just replace a guy like Cole Bishop. He just, you know, he does too much. He's got too much experience. That is a big, big loss for the first half. And then, you know, look, then you insert Nate Ritchie. And look, we all know Nate Ritchie's story, right? True freshman on the 2020 COVID team. Started all five games at safety, played well, and had a very optimistic start to his career. And then he goes away on his church mission, comes back last spring, you know, missed most of spring, you know, with an injury. And the room he walked back into was not the room that he left. Okay. The room he walked back into, it was far more loaded than the one he left. So he walked in with Cole Bishop and Sione Vaki sort of entrenched as the two safeties. But, you know, Richie's a veteran guy. Hasn't played a ton of football, obviously, because he was away, but he is a veteran guy who knows the system, is comfortable under Morgan Scalley's scheme, comfortable with what Kyle Whittingham wants him to do. And look, when Cole Bishop went out with the targeting ejection, you know, insert Nate Ritchie, had four tackles and a sack in the fourth quarter. I mean, you know, he's not new to football. So that's going to be a highly, highly intriguing first half storyline with Bishop out and Nate Ritchie in trying to at least, look, you're not going to stop Caleb Williams, but like at least limit what Caleb Williams is doing through the air and just dealing with that. I don't know that there's like a significant huge drop off. There is some drop off. Again, Nate Ritchie is not Cole Bishop, which is not a knock on Nate Ritchie. That is just the way it is. But I don't think there is a significant drop off where Utah and Kyle Whittingham and Morgan Scalley should be like gravely concerned for that first half.
And this is where, you know, I kind of want to transition to, is Utah ready for a pass heavy offense? They're going to be getting a lot of that. And, you know, it's funny, I agree with you. And then I started pulling some stats, just looking at some PFF coverage grades. And you can argue about PFF and how they do things. It's not great. There, you know, it takes a human eye to be able to do it, and the evaluations aren't always the same. But the one thing, and if you're watching this on YouTube, I've got this scroll going on right now. These are the NFL passer ratings for teams against the specific defender. Cole Bishop, 4.8 is the passer rating against Cole Bishop when you're throwing to him. 4.8. Like, that's like nothing. Like zero, essentially. The next one is Miles Battle at 64.1. You jump up to Nate Ritchie at 91.7. Those are still lower numbers. They're still not like crazy. But the fact that Cole is that good as a safety, he is not allowing anything by him. And so I think that is where this hurts most, right? Like, is, you know, Nate is going to get more run, and so he's going to have more opportunities, and he's going to have those abilities to be able to have that impact on the game. But for a first half where the game's not always decided in the first half, right? And clearly we saw that in this Utah-USC game, in the championship game. Utah was completely outmatched. You know, they were overwhelmed in that first half, and then Utah came out in the second half and absolutely blew the doors off USC. So we don't want to put in too much stock there, but you can lose a game in the first half if you can't stay engaged in it and you're not ready to go and things aren't going. So as much as Cole Bishop is being out hurts Utah, they're going to be okay. But I think this is where it hurts the most, is in the passing game. If Caleb Williams has time to play and, you know, Utah's front four, front seven, whatever you want to call it, isn't getting pressure to him and limiting the time that he's able to have the ball, this is where Utah can absolutely get hurt. You know, Kyle Whittingham has talked about, you know, this is, you know, they've been good. He feels like they have the best pass, one of the best pass efficiencies. That's hard to quantify based on the stats that they use versus what other people use. And so you can kind of say what you want to do. But this is an area of concern for Utah, right? Like, I think Utah's defense has been good and it's still better than most would expect in the past defense, but this is an area of concern, and having Cole out is absolutely the biggest issue here.
Not to get too far off topic, but I was looking at the PFF numbers that you provided. I didn't think that JT Broughton was having a great season. And then
you saw that.
And then I saw that number and it was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's not been great for him.
The passer rating, if you're not watching on YouTube and you're just listening on Spotify or Apple or whatever, according to PFF, the passer rating against JT Broughton is over 120. I was not aware of that. And that, again, it's a little subjective and you can't, you know, it's not gospel, but that does paint the picture of the struggles that he has dealt with, which is a shame because JT Broughton came back for another year, but it has not. It has not been a great year so far for JT Broughton.
No, and look, like I'm gonna jump into this tomorrow in an article. I'm gonna talk about it. What Kyle has said, what Morgan Scalley said, and kind of go over the numbers. So, don't feel like you have to see everything here, but
yeah,
it's a situation where Utah hasn't fully been tested in the passing game, and so it's hard to quantify what this actually means. But the fact for JT Broughton, for example, that he hasn't been as successful in these limited runs, it's not a great sight, right? And Miles Battle, he's had his own issues. He's been a little bit better in coverage, but they've given up, you know, yak. They've given up times where they've just completely blown the assignment and let a guy get past him. Utah has been lucky in a lot of respects where the quarterback either overthrows the player or, you know, it's just out of reach. And so you can't necessarily factor those into these because that's how do you do it? But there are many times, I mean, you look at that Jaden Ott pass that he had, he got past that secondary quickly. Like it didn't take any effort.
That was six if it was on the money.
Oh, 100%. And so I think that's where this concern should fall, right? Like, you know, Morgan kind of teased us a little bit and saying like, do you want me to say I'm not confident in this area? Like he's a coach. He obviously has to feel confident in there. But the reality is he understands that it's got to be a little bit better. He also understands he's got to be a little bit better. He shouldered some of that criticism in terms of how this defense has played because he hasn't put them in the situations or he's not giving them the right play call. And those go hand in hand, right? Like it's not all on the player. It's not all on everything. But the only problem is with somebody of Caleb Williams' stature, that's what magnifies it most because you have to hold on to your guy more than 3 seconds. It has to generally be 6 seconds now because Caleb can roll out. You know, you've got your front four trying to scramble and trying to get him down. One player, I won't name names, said it's hell to play Caleb Williams because it's just incredibly difficult to try to get him. That's where this becomes a challenge. If you're not always on top of your man and you're not losing focus of him, you'll be okay. But if you do, Caleb will beat you and you will be toast. And we've seen that with this team that they've gotten burned a little bit. They've been faked out by maybe the run. And so they come down into the box a little bit and then he blows them open with the player behind them. So you look, if this is an area where Utah should be the most concerned and there's other areas, I think this is probably it.
Yeah. If you consider what the past defense has been and, you know, looking at this Caleb Williams matchup, we should say that like some of the team stats maybe are a little misleading just because look, they've played six games and look, you can't control who you play or who's across from you, right? You have to play that particular person, but let's look at this real quick. You caught Graham Mertz on a bad night. Graham Mertz has been pretty good this year for Florida. Okay. But you caught Graham Mertz on a bad night. You had Sawyer Robertson, who had never started a game for Baylor. You played Weber State, an FCS program, and you played Dante Moore, who's a freshman and looked pretty overwhelmed at times. And you have Fernando Mendoza in there for Cal. So this is a significant, significant step up in class. Goes without saying, right? Caleb Williams won the Heisman last year, and he ran all over Utah in the championship game with a torn hamstring. So this is a significant step up in class. I will also say that Morgan Scalley has schemed well for Caleb Williams twice, right? Look, Caleb Williams is going to get his numbers, and he's going to do some things, and USC is going to score some points. I thought that Morgan Scalley did a pretty admirable, good job twice against USC, regardless of what the numbers may say. The numbers don't say everything. If we're looking at it with our own eyes, Morgan Scalley did a good job against USC's offense twice last year.
Well, and it takes time, right? Like, there's going to be some things where maybe USC comes out with a 14-0 lead and it looks like Utah is going to be destroyed. And you know, maybe that can translate for the rest of the game, and they do. But Morgan is very much so a guy that can make those halftime adjustments or in-game adjustments that can help this Utah team, right? So as much as you want to go into this game and say, okay, Utah's screwed in the secondary or whatever it may be, this is where Morgan makes his money. This is where he's done a really good job. And that's not to say that you know, he can't have an off night either, and this could be a bad night still for Utah. But I think, you know, this is as much as I want to say this is an area where Utah can absolutely struggle, I'm not necessarily as worried about it either within reason because of those in-game adjustments that Morgan Scalley can make. So it'll be an interesting dynamic in trying to figure out how this goes. You know, it's anybody's guess how this will be. Like you said, it's a huge step up in competition. So if Utah can do well against Caleb Williams, I think that bodes well against somebody like a Michael Penix Jr. or a Bo Nix. Still different, and they're, you know, we'll talk about those as we get into those games, but I think that gives them a shot in the arm, so to speak, as to what they can do. Even if you lose this game, it gives you a shot in the arm, so it'll be interesting. But on the offensive side of the ball, Utah loses Thomas Yasmin for the season. The real unfortunate thing is he's now past the time where he could get a medical redshirt, or at least that's my understanding of it. So this is essentially his last season with Utah. He obviously didn't have as much production as he wanted coming back to Utah, and based on Utah's offense, they weren't able to get as much with him. From your perspective, what do you think this does for the offense? Does this hurt them knowing that he didn't have as much impact, or is this not as bad as maybe people would expect?
It doesn't strike me as something like super duper alarming. I think he had eight catches on the year. It's not like this was a prolific pass catching option, but that's a blocker along an experienced physical blocker along the outside. You know, that's a thing, right? That's not everything, but that's a thing. So you're losing, again, an experienced physical blocker and a depth piece at tight end, a position that Utah generally really would like to showcase within its offensive scheme under Andy Ludwig. That has not happened so much this season. I think we said a couple of episodes ago, Landon King is the guy. Yeah. Right now, to me. If Landon King can continue improving and continue to understand the playbook and continue to buy in, you know, you listen to Kyle Whittingham enough. Like, I think Kyle is a fan of what Landon King could be. And if Landon King, again, so look, we're six games in here, right? Like the midway point of the season, you've had a lot of reps, you've had some game experience now. Like if Landon King can get to the point of being trusted as in not necessarily like an every down pass catching option, but two downs, if you can put him on the field in that case and target him five times in a game, six times in a game, and get him three or four catches, like if he can get to that point, that adds a desperately needed element to the offense and a desperately needed sort of security blanket maybe for Bryson Barnes. And, you know, again, we've talked about, you know, when Brand Keithy is healthy, right, that's a guy that you can target 8, 10, 12 times, a security blanket, right? Landon King is not going to be targeted 12 times, but if you can get to a point where you can trust him to be targeted 4 times, 5 times, catch 2 or 3 of those, maybe on third down move the chains, they could really, really use that type of guy at tight end. Maybe Landon King turns into that. I think that would be a real boon if he could turn into that here down the stretch.
Well, and this is the perfect time now to be able to just kind of turn the reins over to him, right? Like he's got to be the guy. That doesn't mean he has to be Brock Bowers or Brant Keithy or Dalton Kincaid, right? Like this is his opportunity to just at least get those game reps, be able to see it in real time. Obviously, he's got to put on more weight, and he's talked about it. He's not shying away from it. He's drinking like 2 a.m. milkshakes. He's doing whatever he can to get that protein in him. And
haven't done that in many, many years. Good for Landon King.
I know, right? So he's trying to bulk up, and that's hard to do in the middle of a season as you're, you know, you're sweating and you're doing those different things. But he's all in. He's bought in. He loves this program. He wants to be here. He wants to be able to be that next impact player. You get Dallin Bentley back. He's been injured a lot, and so he you know, can maybe provide some at least depth in terms of blocking on the line. You've got Noah Benny, who is a walk-on kid who he actually did get some play against Cal. There are some options here. They're just less proven, and so I think, you know, Utah's gonna. It'll be interesting to see what Utah can do with these types of players. We've mentioned before on this podcast, Landon King could have broke free for a touchdown. There's possibilities here. It's just a matter of trying to tie it all in together and getting it all sorted out. So it is a big loss. I don't want to say that Thomas Yasmin isn't a loss. If anything, I feel more bad for him that he wasn't able to get the season that he wanted in his last season. But it is replaceable, and at this point, Utah just has to be, you know, be ready for the next man up more so than they've ever been.
Yeah, you know, I do remember down the stretch last year, Thomas Yasmin playing well, and then, you know, we were at the Rose Bowl and media availability one morning talking to Yasmin. He seemed like very, very, what's the word, optimistic and excited about, you know, the few games that he had just put forward. And he didn't like come out and announce that he was coming back at the Rose Bowl, but it was pretty clear that that he was going to come back for 23. And again, he sounded optimistic and excited and just like very much looking forward to like what this season could be and what he could turn into. Again, did not grow up playing American football, right? Grew up playing rugby, and he came over here to get an education and to play football. And it was a long, long road to get Yasmin to the point that he got to late last season when he played really, really well. So it's a shame. And yes, you are correct. We are past the point of Yasmin being eligible for a medical redshirt, you know, which is a shame. So his career at Utah is over. And we'll see if he can get back for, you know, combine stuff. I'm sure that he, you know, has designs on at least trying his hand at professional football. But, you know, that remains to be seen. You know, we'll see what happens in the future for Thomas Yasmin.
Yeah, it's a tough blow, and you hate to see injuries derail a career, but that's the nature of the game, and that's unfortunately where it's at. So we're running a little long on this podcast, so let's jump to kind of the final thing that I want to talk about, and that's always what Kyle Whittingham thinks is there's a strategy to win every single game. Josh, what is Utah's strategy to win this game?
Get Rising healthy and have him sling it? No. Look, unless that's an option, I don't know.
I don't think
no,
it is.
But no, it's not.
Try.
I think very broadly, what Utah has to do is you have to try to keep Caleb Williams off the field, and that's easier said than done. Well, that might not be easier said than done, right? USC's defense is not good, but you have to control the clock. You have to control the ball. You have to try to limit the opportunities that Caleb Williams has to just be on the field. Now, I'm saying this like very generally. Of course, you know, Caleb Williams is going to get his and USC is going to score some points, but this game, Utah needs to control the tenor of this game, which means winning up front, moving the chains, going on long drives, cashing in the red zone. The bottom line is, you can't let Caleb Williams get too many opportunities. Utah has to control the tone, control the tenor, run the ball, control the clock. Kind of, again, as we kind of talked about versus Cal, one of those quintessential Kyle Whittingham type of offensive games where you are in charge and you are running and controlling the clock and going for 6 yards at a carry. And I said all that, and now I'm going to ask you, does Utah need to be prepared to keep up in a track meet and not what I just said?
No, because, you know, it's funny. You and I obviously didn't plan on our answers. I try to keep that unscripted, and I don't want to know what your answer is. But you and I had pretty much the exact same one, is control the clock. And mine in a different phrasing, I would say, you know, control the physicality, be the most physical team. Last year, you needed to have that, right? Like, I felt like Utah's defense wasn't up to snuff as much. You know, going up against Caleb Williams, you did need to win that track meet. This year, I don't know that that's as necessary, and we'll see, right? Like, Caleb Williams could have a get-right game, and he throws for 500 yards, and Utah's absolutely screwed, and, you know, they have to figure out a way to kind of combat that. But I think this defense is in a much better position where they can now afford to control the clock with a good run game, right? Like, you can have Sione Vaki add Jaquindon Jackson, just ground and pound type game. Honestly, this is the game where Utah needs to introduce USC to the Big Ten, right? Like, they need to say, hey, this is how it is. This is the physical style of play that you're going to get the next, you know, however long you're in the Big Ten or whatever this situation may be, and just own it, right? Like, don't try to get fancy. Don't try to get cute. Don't try to get Bryson Barnes or whoever starting under center to try to win a track meet, because you're not going to do that. This is not designed for Utah to do that.
Keep it straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely.
No gimmick stuff. Keep it straightforward. I think you're right on with the notion of introducing USC to the Big Ten. I think that's very well put, because if you're introducing USC to the Big Ten, that means you are winning up front and you are punching them in the mouth, which is what I promise you, having covered the Big Ten up close, that is what Penn State, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, that's what all those teams are going to try to do to USC.
Absolutely. And that's what this has to be, right? Like, Utah has to show that its defense has improved, and obviously it did that last year, especially in the championship game in the second half, where it just absolutely overwhelmed USC. But you have to set that tone early. If you can't set that tone early, it's going to be difficult. Look, I mean, this is a situation too where Utah can afford some penalties within reason just to prove that you're going to come after them every single play, right? I don't want to, you know, I don't advocate for getting personal fouls, but or pass interference, but go fight. Like, make every battle, you know, yours to win, right? Like, go in there and say, look, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us, and just make them tired, make them worn out, and just do whatever you can to do it that way. So for me, I don't have any imaginations of Utah going in there and blowing the doors off of them, but this is a situation where Utah can dictate it. If they can dictate it in their own terms, yeah, I think Utah can win this game. I'm still not projecting Utah to win this, but that's how I think it's done. I think that's Kyle's strategy. I don't think it's going to be anything different. And I think that's how Utah gets the W if they can do that. So, yeah, I don't know. Anything else from you?
Let me think. From a media standpoint, probably the final trip to LA for the foreseeable future. I don't foresee many Southern California trips. And the point I'm making there is, I promise there's a breakfast burrito in my future in Southern California. I can promise you that.
I got to go to Lupe's. Got to go get my surf and turf tacos.
Yo, I was looking at that menu, that Lupe's menu. That place looks very, very good.
It is.
Like, I might have to go out of my way.
Carne asada, that's fine, right? Like, if you're going to go there and get carne asada, you're missing it. If you can get the surf and turf, man, they hit it on every flavor profile that you can get. So that's my biggest regret of not having this anymore, is there's not, you know, set LA trips to go there. All in general, I don't really care to travel to LA. It's a fine city. It's not my favorite, but Lupe's, man.
I like LA. I like the weather. I like the food. So, this is what we talk, guys. Just quick inside baseball. Like, this is what the media talks about. This is what we goof around, like, waiting for practice to end. Like,
the actual game.
Where are we eating on the road? Okay, like, this is the conversation almost every day between me and Josh Furlong.
Hey, and we actually get Josh Newman traveling to this game. So
let's go. Let's go. Problems with parking. We digress. But seriously, we're double teaming this, this Utah USC game. I will be on the road for this one. We have a lot of coverage already on KSL.com. There's a mailbag out. I wrote a rivalry story. Josh has a Bryson Barnes story out. We've got more stuff coming before this game gets played. So KSL.com for the both of us. He is at JFurKSL on Twitter. I am at Joshua_Newman for all of our Utah USC coverage this week.
Just go read it, all right? Just go do it.
Click that, bro.
Just do it. Click it. Listen. Do whatever you need to. All right, we're signing out. Thanks,
later, guys.